Hello, I'm Terrence Bowman. This is number 0481, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0481. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress and acting coach Anique Matern. She has started something for actors called Impro Gym.
So it's not a workshop. Workshops are really necessary, where you'll learn a specific method or a way to help you move forward with your auditions, etc. And they're all good and fine. But I found that there was a place missing for actors to just go and work out and do exercises. The base of it all was improvisations, because I really believe that actors have everything they need to make it. It's just a matter that they have to follow their own inner guidance system, and improvisation really helps an actor do that.
Shannon O'Dowd is the co-author of The Ultimate On-Camera Guidebook.
I've been a professional on-camera host for, over a decade, and I've been teaching for almost as long. And, from years of teaching and kind of honing the best techniques that really work in this medium, I was like, I really should write a book about this, because there really isn't much in this space.
David Buck, a writer for Tedium on the history of scale modeling. Just like that classic line from The Graduate, the future, my boy, is plastics.
Well, plastics really became popular in and around the 50s when Louis Glaser, who started the Rebel Corporation, was working around with plastic injection molding, and he ended up figuring out a way to create toys with this. And that eventually, long story short, kind of ended up getting him into these various parts that he would use to put together vehicles. And then next thing you know, he's making these model kits.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0481, was Montreal actor, comedian, and writer Terrence Bowman. You can check out his website at terrencebowman.com. And of course, you'll find the link to that by going to thestufffile.com, going to the What's On page for this program, which Terrence just told you the number for. Again, see how this all comes back full circle? And you'll find the link to Terrence's site. By the way, he has something interesting coming up in December on the 14th at Montreal's Mainline Theater. It's a live stage reading of the movie Die Hard, featuring an all-female cast. It's a benefit for the Canadian Women's Foundation. I'm sure that you'll find information about that on Terrence's website when the time is appropriate. Again, that's taking place on December 14th. And I thank you very much, Terrence, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Customers at a vegetarian restaurant in Bangkok were served human flesh from the body of a man killed by the business's owner. Diners were shocked when they found minced meat in a dish that was supposed to be only containing noodles and vegetables. They made a complaint to local authorities, and that triggered an inspection of the restaurant. But local authorities, who were expecting to find minced pork or beef, were stunned when they discovered that the diners were served human flesh. The restaurant's owner is accused of trying to dispose of a man's body by cutting him up, cooking his flesh, and serving it to customers. Police found the chunks of human flesh on the floor and blood splattered on the walls inside the kitchen. Well, that's got to be a health code violation, don't you think? During a search of the premises, they found a 61-year-old man's disfigured body in a septic tank. It is claimed that he was killed during a fight with the restaurant's owner. Okay, seriously, how bright are you if you run a vegetarian restaurant and you're serving up human or any other kind of meat for that matter, I mean, do you think none of your customers would notice? Do you think they'd simply say, tastes like chicken? No. Anyway, police in Tennessee say a half-naked woman fell twice through a restaurant's ceiling and landed in its kitchen. 26-year-old Harley C. Morton was arrested on charges including trespassing and disorderly conduct. A Kingsport police report says a cookout employee called 911 when the naked bottom half of a woman dropped through the ceiling tiles. It says a responding officer found her wallet with her ID on the restaurant's roof. Police say she may have got into the restaurant and into the ceiling through an air conditioning unit. Morton fell through the ceiling again while the officer was on the roof. She landed on the floor and was arrested by other officers. Well, if you're working at a restaurant called Cookout, you're probably going to see plenty of buns. Mind you, they're usually not human, naked, or hanging over the kitchen. Come to think of it, a naked butt over a working kitchen restaurant? That's got to be a health violation, too. Two mothers are suing the Adventure Learning Center daycare in St. Louis over an incident in December of 2016 when teachers organized a fight club among preschoolers. The idea was conceived as a way to entertain the kids while the heater was broken. The 10-year-old siblings of one of the preschoolers was in the next room and captured video of the fights on an iPad, then texted the video to his mom, Nicole Merciel, who believes the fight was broken up only because she called the director of the center. The video shows one teacher jumping up and down in excitement as another one puts Incredible Hulk fists on the kids, and cameras at the center recorded more than 30 minutes of fighting. While the St. Louis Circuit Attorney's Office declined to prosecute, the teachers were fired and the center has been subjected to increased inspections, resulting in 26 violations. The lawsuit is scheduled to go on to trial in December of this year. Now, what I want to know is if there was any kind of betting pool taking place during the bouts. And you do know what the first rule of daycare is, right? Yeah, you don't talk about daycare. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in what can only be described as a shaking-my-head incident, an unnamed employee of the U.S. Geological Survey invited malware into the government agency's computer system by visiting more than 9,000 porn websites on his work computer, according to an inspector general's report. The Washington Post reported on October 30th that many of the websites were Russian, and the malware spread to the entire network at the USGS. The employee also saved images from the sites on a USB drive and personal cell phone, which also contained malware. The Office of the Inspector General made recommendations to the USGS about preventing future malware infections, and a spokesperson for the IG's office said the employee no longer works at USGS. Okay, first of all, call me naive. I mean, I know there is porn out there, but the idea that one person can visit more than 9,000 different porn sites seems disturbing on so many levels. I can't think of anything that comes under one heading that I've visited 9,000 different sites for. For instance, I read a lot of newspaper articles over time. Newspapers are an important source for Stuff File News. I don't think I've read articles from 9,000 different newspapers. Also, if this guy has gone to 9,000 different porn sites at work, then was he getting any work done? And now that he's gone, please tell me the office has simply burned his keyboard. Nobody, and I mean nobody, should have to touch that thing again. Maybe only a hazmat team. Anyway, Let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Anik Matern is a Montreal-based actress who is also an acting teacher who through the years has developed a successful roster of young talent with her unique style of teaching. She's the founder of the award-winning Dynamic Theater Factory. She's now doing something called Impro Gym, so I thought it would be a good idea to talk to Anik about it. She joins us on the line right now from here in Montreal. Hi, Anik. How are you?
I'm great, Peter. Thank you. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I told you a little while ago that I was going to have you on as a guest because you had done one of the opening slates. I've mentioned on this program, and I've mentioned on several programs through the years, that I was lucky enough to see some of your showcases that you would do on an annual basis for Dynamic Theater Factory, and they were absolutely amazing. So now you're doing this thing called Impro Gym. Tell us what that's about.
Oh, it's just amazing. You know, I keep wanting to evolve my methodology. So I created something called Impro Gym. Of course, the Impro is short for improv, and gym is a place, obviously, where actors can come and train. So it's not a workshop. Workshops are really necessary, where you'll learn a specific method or a way to help you move forward with your auditions, etc. And they're all good and fine. But I found that there was a place missing in Montreal for actors to just go and work out and do exercises. But mainly, the most important thing I've always done, and that was with Dynamic Theater Factory as well, the base of it all was improvisations, because I really believe that actors have everything they need to make it. It's just a matter that they have to follow their own inner guidance system, and improvisation really helps an actor do that. It has everything to do with focusing your mind, following your impulse. It's intuition training. That's what it is. And so methodologies are great, fantastic, and necessary. However, the actor also really needs to learn how to listen inside of themselves, because we get so caught up with what to do and where to stand and where to look at to the camera and you know, what's the next method I can bring to heighten my chances? And then we forget that, you know what, we really need to listen to what's going on inside of us. And this training really, really helps an actor focus on that.
Spencer Tracy once famously said that all his job was to do was to learn his lines and not bump into the furniture. You've now taken that one step further, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah. You got to feel where the furniture is. You have to know where it is. So in other words, I help actors also work on the imaginary aspect of what they do. So when you walk into an audition room, you're always faced with the casting agent or the producer or someone who's hoping to hire you. But that's it. It's a table, a chair, a couple of lights, a camera, and you've got to create magic. And an actor needs to remember that he also has an emotional and visceral connection to his environment. And so we work on environment exercises, and it just, again, it's training, it's working. And we bridge all of this together. My new methodology is coming. I follow a wonderful program in the morning. I get up at 5:30, Peter.
Wow.
I get up at 5:30 in the morning. And I follow a Proctor Gallagher Institute program called Thinking into Results. And I've always been really intrigued and really inspired by motivational speakers. I even went down to Florida with a good friend of mine a few years ago to listen to Tony Robbins. And he's always talking about being in a certain state and being in a peak state and so on. And I'm realizing more and more as my methodology is evolving, it's that we really cannot be in a peak state until we've dealt with our subconscious limitations and things like that. And actors, being as sensitive as they are and living in a world of an industry of rejection, it's really important for actors to go past any limiting beliefs and understand that they can control their thoughts and create goals that will create incredible performance results in the end.
Now, when somebody says Impro Gym, and as you mentioned, it's a style of improv. When people think of improv, the first thing that comes to their mind is comedy improv. When it comes to acting improv, how different is that from what one will do in comedy improv?
Oh, that's such a brilliant question. The difference is in comedy, of course, you're looking to, well, first thought, not best thought, of course. We also have that with the improvs we do. But it's more game-oriented, whereas with what I do, I use improv games in the beginning as warm-ups because, again, it's helping us to target our focus. But then right away, we're going into improvs that deal with, for example, what is an intention? What does it mean exactly? So the other day, I wrote two one-word scene. It's a scene, but with one word per dialogue. So you have two characters. They each have a word each to say at a time, and it's about a page long. So they have to make and create a situation out of that one word. Well, what's great is that it being just one word, you're focusing on one intention at a time. So you're really allowing that intention to be felt through your energy system, through your heart, and you're connecting with your partner. And so it's a reminder, once again, for actors that are constantly going on auditions, how to stay connected to what's important in the work.
Now, I remember back in the days, like I said, when I used to go and see your showcases from Dynamic Theater Factory, the thing that caught my attention was the fact that there was a wide range of age groups. They were mostly young people, but you had kids as well. And I'm assuming that it's the same thing with Impro Gym. And I'm just wondering, when you're training children, as opposed to training teens or young adults, do you find that that the older one gets, or the older one is when they start this type of training, the more you have to get around whatever reserve they have? Like, children are very open and expressive.
Yes. Children are very open, Peter. And what another great question. I'm thrilled because I have Impro Gym where, in fact, it's with adults. So the youngest is 17 going on 18 right now, and it's all adults. Otherwise, I'm teaching kids at a triple threat school called Dance 123, Danse en deux trois. And there I'm kind of encouraging what I was doing at DTF and bringing the next generation of young actors up into the profession. But what's amazing is that I'm able to get so much from working with young kids, that sense of innocence, and they're in their imagination. They have a belief system when they're playing that is so strong that I'm able to bring that back to the adults and say, hey, when did we become adults? Where is the inner child? Can we bring that back into the work? And basically instill an essence of fun, because that's something that when you get in the middle of the industry, you really lose touch with fun.
Now, in addition to being a busy acting teacher, you're also a busy actress. I'm just curious to know, as a teacher, what does your teaching do to help you, Anik Matern, the actress?
It's quite amazing. It's like a lot of the great actors in Hollywood who have now become directors. I think that you know how to communicate with an actor when you're an actor yourself. You understand the sense of vulnerability that's needed in order to bring a wonderful performance forward, and also how to protect that vulnerability. So it's like the law of opposites. Everything is a balancing act when you're an actor. And because I take risks, because I take creative risks myself, because I put myself out there, because I land jobs and I work on set, I understand exactly what an actor goes through. So in the middle of a scene when an actor's having a bit of a hiccup or, like we were saying earlier, adults can sometimes have a lot of resistance. I'm able to sort of instill or bring back or remind them of, you know, the fun that's needed and the energy that's needed to change that moment, change their perception, and allow them to reattack the scene in a different way. So often it's about that. You know, what is a belief? A belief is only a thought we think over and over and over. So sometimes we need to remind ourselves as actors that if we want to go forward and we really want to live a life full, of exciting and dynamic opportunities, we have to be willing to change our perceptions. And that means in our life as well as in the work we're doing.
Okay, we have just about a minute, so I got to ask this question because you mentioned auditioning before, and full disclosure, to me, auditioning is just terror. The analogy I'll use is you might have a wonderful time if you get into a fancy club and you get to go to a great dance party, but you have to get past the velvet rope and the bouncer, and that's the audition. So,
yeah, absolutely. Past the bouncer. That's so well said. Yep.
Is that the most difficult aspect? Is that the thing you really train people to do, to get past that bouncer?
I'll tell you something. It absolutely is. But it's the bouncer is in our mind. And that's what we have to make friends with that bouncer. We have to take him out for a drink. You know, we have to sit back and have a nice loving chat with him. And then we have to kind of tell him to go off on vacation. Because the bouncer really is there. It's all about how we're perceiving things. We have to come in to an audition as actors. We have to feel empowered. And a lot of that comes from understanding that we also have an energy body. It's not just work on the mind and the intellect. It's how to prepare ourselves energetically before we enter an audition room so that we own this. It is our fun moment to perform, and it is not a place where we need to prove. That's the difference.
People can find out more about what you're offering by going to your Facebook page, which is Acting Coach Anique Matern, correct?
Exactly.
Anique, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Hey, Peter, thank you, and thanks for your support over the years. It's always great to hear from you.
Actress and acting coach Anique Matern. You can check out her Facebook page at Acting Coach Anique Matern. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0481, and you'll find the link to Anique's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Here's a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada. A country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come in the program, we will talk to Shannon O'Dowd, the co-author of the Ultimate On-Camera Guidebook. Plus, we'll learn a little bit about the history of scale modeling with David Buck, who is a writer for Tedium. We do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way, and more Stuff File news here on the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com, and whichever platform you listen to the program on, please, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. A medical examiner in Lakeland, Florida, ruled the death of 40-year-old Bryant Fidanian a murder, even though his wife, 38-year-old Rachel, said it was an accident. According to her arrest affidavit, Rachel called 911 and said she was holding her dog while doing the dishes, ran towards her husband, slipped, and accidentally stabbed him. Later in the same call, she allegedly said that she was slicing pizza before walking to her husband, tripping him, and accidentally stabbing him. Detectives said she later added that she noticed her dog had defecated on itself, and when she went to clean up the mess, she slipped in it and fell on her husband, accidentally stabbing him. In another version, she allegedly said the dog started defecating and urinating on itself, and then she tripped on the rug and accidentally stabbed her husband. In the end, they determined this was an intentional act of domestic violence, according to Sheriff Grady Judd. Judd went on to say, incidentally, her arrest occurred during Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Oh, I think we're all aware now. Do you get the feeling that back in the day when Rachel was in school, her dog also ate a lot of her homework? Yeah. Deborah Reno, a candidate for city council in Evanston, Wyoming, has deleted her online store now that her side job has come to light. Reno, a massage therapist and yoga instructor, was better known online as Misty Crockett. Her online store offered used panties and dirty gym shorts, $20 plus shipping if you are interested, as well as stripping videos starring herself, or I should say, Misty. If you want to run for public office, it's probably not a good idea, Reno said, but she refused to drop out of the race. Yes, I sold panties online, I admit it. That does not make me a weak or bad person. You know, I'm reminded of the scandal-plagued former governor of Louisiana, Edwin Edwards, who on the eve of an election victory back in 1983 joked with reporters by saying, "The only way I can lose this election is if I'm caught in bed with either a dead girl or a live boy." Of course, he won. An unnamed 22-year-old man going through security at the airport in Baltimore, Maryland, was pulled aside. Screeners watching the X-ray machine's scans couldn't miss what was in his carry-on bag, a .40-caliber rifle. The man from Hagerstown claimed he had no idea the gun was in his bag because he said his mother packed his bag for him. He was arrested anyway, charged with illegally possessing a firearm, violating airport security procedures, and having a weapon in an airport. The only consolation, the gun wasn't loaded. But I'll give even odds that his mommy was. You do realize that this is one guy who can literally say he has a pistol-packing mama. Still at the airport, police say a baggage handler told them he was drunk when he fell asleep in a cargo hold and flew from Kansas City to Chicago. American Airlines says a Piedmont Airlines employee was working American Flight 363 on Saturday when the Boeing 737 left Kansas City's International Airport with the handler in a heated and pressurized cargo hold. Chicago police's spokesman said he was found when the flight landed about an hour later at Chicago's O'Hare International. The spokesman says the handler told police he was intoxicated and had fallen asleep. No charges were filed and he was sent back to Kansas City. Okay, I'm assuming he was given a seat for the return flight. Anyway, American says it is grateful the handler wasn't injured and it's reviewing what happened. Okay, are you worried about what I'm worried about? I think American Airlines might have just found another cost-saving way to shuttle passengers back and forth. Pretty soon they'll be offering business class, economy, and steerage. Wait and see. And finally in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder, as a police officer in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, was searching 27-year-old Ashley Curry after she allegedly shoplifted nose spray at a Walmart store, she stuck out her stomach area and told the officer that he could, quote, suck a pink cow udder. Was that a threat? A bribe? That's unclear, but it was apparently related to what she was wearing. A black and white cow costume. Yes, it had udders. And yes, the officer took an evidence photo. A Curry was taken to jail and given a new black and white outfit. This one had stripes. She was released after posting $1,520 in bail. Yes, I know. Ashley showed utter contempt for police. Clearly, she had a beef with the officer. Oh, I'll stop now. I don't want to milk this story anymore. Let's just get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff All program, shall we? Shannon O'Dowd is a seasoned TV host and spokesperson in Los Angeles. She is the co-author of the upcoming book, The Ultimate On-Camera Guidebook, Hosts, Experts, Influencers, which she co-wrote with a great friend of this show, Jackie Jordan. Shannon joins us on the line via Skype from Los Angeles. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. The purpose for writing this book, you have worked in this industry for a while now. What made you and Jackie feel that this book was necessary?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a professional on-camera host for, you know, over a decade, and I've been teaching for almost as long. And, you know, from years of teaching and kind of honing the best techniques that really work in this medium, I was like, I really should write a book about this because there really isn't much in this space. And Jackie and I, through some fortuitous events, were able to meet each other. And, you know, she was really kind of having the same vision. So we decided, wouldn't it be amazing if we combined all of our experience and we wrote a book together?
Now, one of the things I find very interesting is, again, the subtitle. You have it divided by hosts, experts, and influencers. And they are really three different things. As one who has been a host for many, many years, both in radio and television, I understand that aspect. But when we're dealing with experts, you know, there are a lot of people who come on radio and television shows who are really experts in their field, but they can't necessarily put that expertise into words. How do you help those people? And in turn, help me.
Well, you know, experts, like you said, they're amazing in their field. You know, they are the go-to person, but they're wanting to translate that expertise to television. And, you know, that's what media training really is. It's, you know, taking your expertise and creating sound bites and talking points and, you know, a brand message for you so that people know what they can count on you for, what they can expect. And also you have talking points in your back pocket so that when you're making an appearance, you're able to be dynamic. You know things that you can say, and you're not kind of just out there like, oh gosh, what are they going to ask me? What's going to happen? You actually have tools where you're set up for success in that capacity. And a lot of times, somebody who's an expert really has aspirations to eventually one day be a host. And it is true that a lot of hosts were at one point experts. So, you know, it's a really great skill to have to be able to be on TV and understand that medium and maybe even take it to other places, like eventually hosting your own show.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. The leap from expert to host, it's not as easy as it sounds. So what is the biggest hurdle that an expert who wants to become a host at some point, and I guess the best example of that would be Dr. Phil.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's an expert who became a host. What's the biggest leap that someone has to make in that transition?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in today's climate, it's not, and I'm sure you've noticed this as well, like 10, 15, 20 years ago, you could just really be a dynamic, amazing host and you could have a career doing it. But if you're looking at television programming today, a lot of the hosts are celebrities or experts. So the climate is really lending itself to those two categories. So if you are an expert and that's kind of the avenue that you're taking to hopefully eventually one day have your own show, it's really important that you hone your messaging, that you figure out what your voice is, that you're really dynamic in your space and you're willing to be unapologetically you, and your authentic you every time you're on camera. You're not pretending to try to be perfect. You're really just out there being yourself. And if the climate is right and networks see you and are like, wow, he's our guy or she's our gal, you know, the stars can kind of align and you can really get some amazing opportunities.
Now that third word in the subtitle is influencers. And I guess that is a relatively new one with the advent of social media and things like YouTube. The idea that someone can be an influencer, which is, to be honest, a lesser original skill than the first two, but becoming more and more important. I mean, my bugaboo has always been, as someone who is trained to do what I do, that if you do it well, people assume that anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. And to a certain degree, influencers are some of the people who feel, well, I can do this. Is that accurate or is it not?
Well, you know, it is kind of the wild, wild west out there in terms of social media and that space. And, you know, influencers, more often than not, they have a specific lane. They have something that's of interest to them, that they're inspired by. And, you know, with enough followers, with enough engagement, it's almost that they become quasi experts in their space. Like, somebody may not be went to a hair and makeup academy and is, you know, a full-on licensed, you know, makeup artist or a hair person, but if they're incredible with their videos and their photos and their content, enough people start following them, they get enough engagement, they almost become an expert in that space. So it's just a really interesting time with the whole influencer thing. And, you know, the opportunities are becoming really cool for them to get, like, you know, brand affiliations that are really big, agents that potentially can pitch them for television shows and television appearances. It really is an interesting time.
You work as a coach. At the core of what you do as a coach, does it change when you work with someone who is a host, an expert, or an influencer? Or is it the same for you at the core when you first work with these people?
It's different. It's very different. Being an expert is a completely different skill set than being a host. You know, obviously, you know, as a host, you're responsible for guiding us through the entire process, for handling all the different elements, making your guest comfortable, getting us all the way through the end in not only a smooth way, but also a dynamic and entertaining way. You know, the expert is really there to support you, to, you know, provide interesting facts that maybe your audience may not know, also be dynamic and contribute to, you know, the entertainment of the show. But they're very different skill sets. I mean, even engagement with the camera, you know, an expert really engages with the host. A host's job is to speak into the camera and make the audience at home feel like they're part of that conversation. So even technically, it's a very different thing.
And influencers, when you deal with them, do you work with influencers a lot?
I really do now, which has been an interesting change of the tides. I have a lot of publicists, PR firms, managers, agents that will reach out to me because they are representing an influencer and getting them brand alignment deals. But now there's been kind of this wave to do dynamic video content. So they might be an Instagram influencer that does amazing pictures, and they're being encouraged to now, you know, do more video. And that's kind of where I come in and help them create more dynamic videos that are also in alignment with, you know, their lane and their brand.
No one wants to be a dream crusher, but have you come across people where they come to you and say, I need your help. I want to be X, Y, or Z, a host, expert, or influencer. And you have to say, maybe not.
You know, no one wants to be a dream crusher, that's for sure. I don't know that I've ever told anybody that it's not possible for them to have opportunities, you know, especially if they're an expert. You know, everybody has something really unique to say, especially if they have that background of experience. I might guide somebody to go, you know, if somebody's dying to be an entertainment reporter and their energy and style is completely not in alignment with an entertainment reporter, I might encourage them to do another lane where they might get more opportunities. But yeah, I always try to, I feel like there's a place for everybody. And I certainly don't feel like it's my job to tell somebody that their dream is not going to ever come into fruition. So I just try to help them, guide them into what I see might be a nice fit for them.
Okay, so generally speaking, what's the biggest hurdle you have to overcome with any particular client as a coach?
The biggest hurdle is typically nervousness, I would say. You know, people getting in their own way, feeling the need to be perfect, which can really disarm you and, you know, take away all the beautiful things that kind of naturally come out of you in everyday life. Once you turn that camera on, a lot of people freeze up and feel like, oh gosh, I have to do this exactly right. And taking off that mask and getting people to just feel comfortable being themselves, because that's all we really want to see, that's often my biggest hurdle.
No one wants to have that Albert Brooks in Network moment, which was just a horrible scene in that movie to watch. The book is the ultimate on-camera guidebook. Hosts, experts, influencers. Clearly, you are an expert at what you do, and I say that not only from the fact that you were on this program talking so eloquently about the topic, but you co-wrote this book with Jackie Jordan, and Jackie is the best. So
she sure is. I'm a big fan.
So by association, you too have to be the best.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I thank you very much, Shannon, for being on the program to share the information and talk about your book.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Shannon O'Dowd, co-author of The Ultimate On-Camera Guidebook, Hosts, Experts, Influencers. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0481, and you'll find links to Shannon's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. A couple of years ago, I saw a public opinion poll that said most people are more likely to know the names of the characters on their favorite TV show than the name of even one judge on their state Supreme Court. Now, since we don't see our state's top judges on TV every day, it's easy to understand why this is true. But considering that these judges can make as much public policy each year as the lawmakers in our state capitals, it should make us think twice. Because judges on our state's top courts are so important, they're elected in most states, and many of them will be on our ballots this November. Let's be fair, judicial elections can be a mystery to many of us. But this election, let's change that. However you choose to vote, make it a point to get to know the men and women who are running to be a judge in your state, both at the local and the state level. Because of the First Amendment, they can answer your questions just like any other candidate. So feel free to ask them their views on the issues that you care most about. It's your right. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll share a little bit of the history of scale modeling. We'll also have an idiot of the day coming your way. And a few more Stuff File news stories here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, construction workers in Valdosta, Georgia, were rattled when, on October 30th, they tore down a second-story wall in a turn of the 20th-century building to find about 1,000 human teeth secreted inside. They just kind of tumbled out when they opened the wall. The TB Converse building, constructed in 1900, was originally home to a dentist, Dr. Clarence Whittington. In 1911, Whittington was joined by Dr. Lester G. Yeomans. Ellen Hill, director of the Valdosta Main Street, said, "Two other Georgia towns have had buildings, also home to dentist office, where teeth have been found in the walls. I'm not sure if it was a common practice to deposit extracted teeth in the walls," she said. Valdosta police said there was no evidence of a crime. Okay, no evidence of a crime, but, you know, that's just a little bit creepy. I don't know where you are right now as you listen to this, but if you're in a quiet room somewhere, do you now have the disconcerting feeling that somehow the walls are smiling at you? Yeah. Anyway, during the Dulwich Hamlet versus Premier League Crystal Palace soccer match in Tooting, England, an announcement came over the loudspeakers. "Can the owner of the car blocking the emergency exit please speak to your nearest steward?" The page gave the car's license plate information and repeated two more times, culminating in the threat the car would be towed on the third announcement. Finally, the owner, Dulwich's goalie, Preston Edwards, shouted, "That's my car!" The crowd began chanting, "Preston, move your car! Preston, Preston, move your car!" Eventually, a fan moved Edwards' car for him. Preston explained that he'd parked there because he was running late and saw no spaces. Dulwich lost that game 5-0. Well, maybe next time, perhaps Preston should park in front of the goal. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? We've often talked about the great online newsletter, Tedium, which is subtitled The Dull Side of the Internet. Usually, we focus on one of the items that catches our eye. When we do, we have Ernie Smith on to talk about it, but the one that caught my eye this time around was submitted by another writer by the name of David Buck. David wrote about the history of scale modeling, so he joins us on the line right now from Colorado. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing?
Jess Tickety-Boo, thanks very much for being on the program with us. You wrote an article called Super Small Models, and it gave a little bit of the history of scale modeling. I take it this is something that, as a child and maybe even as an adult, you were into yourself?
Oh, absolutely. As a kid, it was all spaceships and Star Trek and Star Wars. And as an adult, after getting out of it for a few years, it's mostly been scale cars. Scale model cars and occasional aircraft, but mostly vehicles.
Now, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and according to your article, that was really the heyday of when a lot of the plastic models were a big hit. But let's go back a little earlier to the beginning of scale models. These have been around for years and years and years, and I guess before the days of plastic, they were wooden. But when did that change take place? When did plastics become popular?
Well, plastics really became popular in and around the 50s when Louis Glaser, who started the Revell Corporation, was working around with plastic injection molding, and he ended up figuring out a way to create toys with this, and that eventually, you know, long story short, kind of ended up getting him into these various parts that he would use to put together vehicles, and then next thing you know, he's making these model kits.
And he was the first big company to do so, but there were also later on some big competing companies, right?
Correct. So eventually you had MPC come around, AMT, who did a lot of what they would call showroom cars, like something that a car salesman would use to show. They'd use a little scale model to show off the features and details of a vehicle to prospective purchasers, and they eventually entered into that arena. And then you had Monogram, which was another big competitor. So eventually you had the big four, so to speak, Revell, Monogram, MPC, and AMT competing in the marketplace. So a little bit later on when things drastically changed.
I think what you just described with what they were making, those competing companies were making, was what I was really into, because I was more into the customized street cars that everyone was accustomed to at the time. Those are the kind of things I would make. I guess that's when the kids, and most of the times people were doing this were kids. I guess that's the time when a lot of people got really into it, because they could make something that they could literally see outside their window.
Right. And, you know, the kids were really into it. It was a huge thing. And for instance, Boys Life magazine, and later on, Popular Mechanics featured every decade or so, really, up until about the 80s. You know, Popular Mechanics talked about it going from being a kid's hobby to being a teenager's hobby, and then back to being a kid's hobby again. So it kind of fluctuated, but it's largely been something, you know, in its early incarnations, of course, and through its popularity, being something that was designed around kids, but with other applications.
I also grew up around the time that the space race was very big and the Apollo missions were going on. So some of the things that were being done in models in those days were the Apollo mission space capsules, the entire Apollo rocket with the booster system, the whole thing. And there were also some other spaceships that were used from the world of sci-fi. What was... Mm-hmm. Oh, and of course there were also airplanes. What, during the heyday of scale modeling, were the most popular? Was it space? Was it air travel? Or was it cars?
It was actually a combination of air travel and cars. I think the aerospace technology and that whole entire world just caught the public's imagination by a very strong grip. And you would have military aircraft that would become very popular kits, and then you'd have submarines and naval craft as well. And then it wasn't until maybe the 60s, around hot rodding days, that cars became the major draw.
Now, again, Ravel was the big player in the world of modeling. You mentioned some of the others, ATM and MPC, mm-hmm. and they all had a big heyday in the 70s and perhaps a little bit into the 80s. When did it start to decline?
The declining of it was probably mid-70s. Mid-70s and definitely in the 80s. There were a lot of different factors. You know, kids who were big into the hobby as kids in the 60s, they grew up and went on to work and do other things and just kind of fell behind keeping up with the models. And then the plastic prices, of course, increased, which caused production costs to skyrocket. And eventually started having companies like Monogram facing tough financial challenges and merging with companies like Ravel to create, a singular company out of once healthy competitors. So really, I think the 80s would probably be my final, thought on that. You really don't see a lot of articles from Popular Mechanics after that. You don't see it being a huge thing as far as the public's imagination. And you really see it occasionally pop up here and there as a niche rather than a popular.
Would it be fair to say that the popularity built up and also waned off because it was catering to a group that was a large part of the population, and that is baby boomer boys? And as they grew up, the kids behind them, the numbers weren't there to sustain the companies that existed when they were in that prime age of model building.
Oh, absolutely. My father, who got me into modeling, definitely grew up in that generation. And, he and many of his peers were heavily into that. And as they grew up, they, let it go. And then later on in life, they start taking it up again. So that's something that we're seeing now is kind of a resurgence, which is kind of interesting. And then for me, I'm in my mid-30s. And so modeling was kind of at that niche stage when I started picking it up. We had video games and other stuff to distract us. And I think many of my generation didn't really get into it for that reason.
Well, let's talk about the video game generation. Are any of them into modeling these days? How are the companies, or what companies are left, first of all, and how are they doing in today's modern world?
Well, right now, all of the big four are not really functioning as individual companies. MPC and AMT were purchased by a company called Round 2 LLC. And they go through and they reissue just various kits from throughout the years based off different licenses and off the different designs of those other groups. Monogram was purchased by Ravel back in the 80s, and they merged together. So, Ravel became its own entity for a very long time. They had an offshoot called Ravel Germany, which is still operational. And earlier this year or late last year, I don't recall offhand, but the original Ravel that was based in Illinois actually shut down and all of their production ceased and went to Ravel Germany. And there was a while where we didn't think that Ravel was going to be releasing kits in the United States anymore. But it turns out Ravel Germany is handling all of that. But they're so far removed from the original Ravel that it's not even the same company anymore. But they do have all the licenses and whatnot. So it's pretty much reissues at this point.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned that they're reissues. And the reason why I say that is maybe it's my age showing here, but I think another reason why it has fallen off on hard times is based on the original of what they were trying to create with the scale modeling. And that is, back when I was a kid, there was more variety when it came to the various car makers making various cars that changed every year and were distinct and different, as opposed to now, where sometimes it's sometimes hard to tell a car maker's vehicles apart from their competitors. There's a similarity, and therefore the models aren't as interesting.
Oh, absolutely. The models from more modern cars, more recent cars, just aren't as interesting. You don't see a fancy hatchback-style vehicle with a weird interior on the road today like you would have, around the 80s. You definitely don't get hot rods and some of the things that Big Daddy Roth was known for creating in the modern model scene. Much of it has transitioned over to a more of a pop culture bent as well. That pop up, or the niche companies that come in, you know, they're doing stuff from Battlestar Galactica, or they're creating like Mobius models, which is a more modern company, and they do horror movie figurines and, you know, the Grim Reaper and things like that. So the variety, the decrease in variety of the models of vehicles, like you said, definitely seems to translate across to the production of model kits.
Yeah. It's a different world, but it was a fun time when scale modeling was the big deal. It was fun reading your article, and people can find out more about the article by going to Tedium and reading what you had to say. It's on scale modeling. David, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a delight chatting with you, and you know, have a nice day.
David Buck, who occasionally writes articles for the website and newsletter Tedium. You can go to my website, tothestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0481, and you'll find links to their site. You'll also find links to another site that David writes for called Nerdvana. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A 911 call led to the arrest of a Walmart worker in Brown Deer, Wisconsin on October 17th. According to Brown Deer police, around 2 a.m. they received a 911 hang-up call from an employee inside the store. A responding officer made contact with a 27-year-old woman from Milwaukee, and it was determined that she accidentally made the call. She was then arrested for an open warrant out of Glendale. She was taken to the police station where she was booked. Now, I know it's a mistake, but I have to ask, why? Oh, why? If you know that you have an outstanding warrant for your arrest, would you even put yourself in the position of butt-dialing 911? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0481. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0481. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of... Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.